English Listening Comprehension Test, Spring 2014 Advanced Level. This test is in five parts. Part 5 has separate directions. In parts 1, 2, 3, and 4, you will answer the questions asked in the booklet by choosing the best alternative answer according to what you have heard. Mark each answer on the optical answer sheet. The test is about to begin. Now you will hear part one twice. First, listen to it straight through.
We're pleased to have Sam Mellinger here this morning to talk to us about a great sportsman, Michael Phelps.
Thanks, it's great to be here. Now, I know that the Olympics were a couple of years back, but at that time, a lot of people claimed that Michael Phelps was the greatest Olympian of all times, bar none. Well, he is historical. He's a fabulous athlete, and somehow this makes many of us miss the point. No athlete, not even Jamaican sprinter Usain Bolt, dominated his or her sport this thoroughly for this long. As of the 2012 Olympics, Phelps had taken 22 Olympic medals, 18 of them gold. Greatest? But this is a problem on a few levels. First and foremost, that he's not the greatest Olympian ever. Not once you dig beneath the surface. Not at all, says David Wallace, an author and historian, and perhaps the world's leading expert on all things Olympics. You see, the hole in the case for Phelps as the best Olympian never comes down to mathematics. It comes down to opportunity. We need a complete re-evaluation of the 22 medals is the only argument I need point. We have to ask, how many people have run 100 meters and how many people have swum a 200-meter backstroke? It's estimated that nearly half the world's population can't swim. Nearly everyone has run, however. Phelps won a lot of medals. But there are those who say he should take a back seat to Mark Spitz, who retired after winning 7 golds at the 1972 Games in Munich because he couldn't make a full-time living in the sport. Phelps has made fantastic money at it, but even more importantly, how many more medals might Spitz have won had he also competed in Montreal in 1976 and in the 1980 Games in Moscow that America boycotted? This is part of the argument that former British distance runner Sebastian Coe made against Phelps. And Coe was head of the London Olympic Organizing Committee. They say nobody's bigger than their sport. But Phelps might be the exception. Billion-dollar corporations bid up the rights to use his face to move their products. This was unheard of for a swimmer before Phelps. He's swimming's first global brand, a one-man cash machine in a sport that had long featured anonymous, hairless bodies in skin-tight shorts and rubber caps. Phelps admitted to not training as obsessively for London as he did for Beijing. Maybe that's why he didn't medal in the 400-meter individual medley. Whatever. There's more going on here than meets the eye. Phelps didn't need to swim the 400 medley. Actually, he probably should have skipped it. When he decided to take part, coaches and promoters everywhere should have thanked him for the extra interest he brought to the sport. The Olympics are about moments. Phelps gave us moments. Tiger Woods' success created a financial bonanza for golf, and Lance Armstrong's retirement left an enormous void in cycling. There's no telling what Phelps' success could mean for swimming's future. There's a real chance for what I'd call no fuel, no fire. We've had a lot to think about, talk about, write about for several years, so the hole he leaves is tremendous. It leaves a burden on swimming. But what made Phelps' stature even more special was that he became a global icon in a niche sport based solely upon his own accomplishments, talent, and training, not his personality. In an era when flamboyance and heartache are top sellers, what he did away from the pool rarely made headlines. In this realm, because of what he did in the pool, Phelps really could be the greatest ever.
Now listen to the same talk in four sections. Look at questions 1 and 2.
We're pleased to have Sam Mellinger here this morning to talk to us about a great sportsman, Michael Phelps.
Thanks. It's great to be here. Now, I know that the Olympics were a couple of years back, but at that time, a lot of people claimed that Michael Phelps was the greatest Olympian of all times, bar none. Well, he is historical. He's a fabulous athlete, and somehow this makes many of us miss the point. No athlete, not even Jamaican sprinter Usain Bolt, dominated his or her sport this thoroughly for this long. As of the 2012 Olympics, Phelps had taken 22 Olympic medals, 18 of them gold. Greatest? But this is a problem on a few levels. First and foremost, that he's not the greatest Olympian ever. Not once you dig beneath the surface. Not at all, says David Wallace, an author and historian, and perhaps the world's leading expert on all things Olympics.
Answer questions 1 and 2, then look at questions 3 and 4.
You see, the hole in the case for Phelps as the best Olympian never comes down to mathematics. It comes down to opportunity. We need a complete reevaluation of the 22 medals is the only argument I need point. We have to ask, how many people have run 100 meters and how many people have swum a 200-meter backstroke? It's estimated that nearly half the world's population can't swim. Nearly everyone has run, however. Phelps won a lot of medals. But there are those who say he should take a back seat to Mark Spitz, who retired after winning 7 golds at the 1972 Games in Munich because he couldn't make a full-time living in the sport. Phelps has made fantastic money at it, but even more importantly, how many more medals might Spitz have won had he also competed in Montreal in 1976 and in the 1980 Games in Moscow that America boycotted? This is part of the argument that former British distance runner Sebastian Coe made against Phelps. And Coe was head of the London Olympic Organizing Committee.
Answer questions 3 and 4, then look at questions 5 and 6.
They say nobody's bigger than their sport, but Phelps might be the exception. Billion-dollar corporations bid up the rights to use his face to move their products. This was unheard of for a swimmer before Phelps. He's swimming's first global brand, a one-man cash machine in a sport that had long featured anonymous, hairless bodies in skin-tight shorts and rubber caps. Phelps admitted to not training as obsessively for London as he did for Beijing. Maybe that's why he didn't medal in the 400-meter individual medley. Whatever. There's more going on here than meets the eye. Phelps didn't need to swim the 400 medley. Actually, he probably should have skipped it. When he decided to take part, coaches and promoters everywhere should have thanked him for the extra interest he brought to the sport.
Answer questions 5 and 6, then look at questions 7 and 8.
The Olympics are about moments. Phelps gave us moments. Tiger Woods' success created a financial bonanza for golf, and Lance Armstrong's retirement left an enormous void in cycling. There's no telling what Phelps' success could mean for swimming's future. There's a real chance for what I'd call no fuel, no fire. We've had a lot to think about, talk about, write about for several years, so the hole he leaves is tremendous. It leaves a burden on swimming. But what made Phelps' stature even more special was that he became a global icon in a niche sport based solely upon his own accomplishments, talent, and training, not his personality. In an era when flamboyance and heartache are top sellers, what he did away from the pool rarely made headlines. In this realm, because of what he did in the pool, Phelps really could be the greatest ever.
Answer questions 7 and 8. This is the second part of the test. You will hear this part twice. Listen to this part straight through. This morning, we will hear Derek Burden and Liz Brown talk about Birmingham. Derek is a journalist who lives in Birmingham, but works in London, about 160 kilometers to the south.
We know about London, but what about the city that will be at the other end of the high-speed rail, otherwise known as HS2? And most of my friends have the same sort of reaction to Birmingham, the capital of the Midlands, as did Queen Victoria. When passing through the region by train, she asked for the blinds to be drawn. I mean, this is an insult to Brummies. Even Brummies like me, who work down in London all week and only get home at the weekend. What do you think about all this, Liz?
Well, Derek, you see, my decision to keep one foot in Birmingham after I moved to work in London full-time was based on the city's practical advantages. Let's take the property prices, for example. I have a modest four-bedroom terrace in Birmingham with lovely large rooms. It's valued at around £220,000. If I sold up and moved to London, I could only hope to exchange it for a shoebox somewhere in the suburbs. What's more, I'd have to give up my garden.
Another thing is education. It's easy to find a good school in Birmingham because there are lots of them. As I listen to my London-based colleagues complaining about the lack of good schools near their homes and the amount they were having to save to pay for private education, I realised how lucky Brummies are. My four daughters went to state-funded grammar schools, all of which had excellent exam results. The expenses were minimal, and most importantly, they were all happy.
Yes, and the high-speed railway, HS2, is so important for the whole West Midlands region and beyond. Those who see HS2 simply as a way of getting to work faster on a Monday morning have missed the point. The real benefit for the West Midlands will be the huge increase in capacity that HS2 promises. Existing services are already overcrowded. By 2024, every route into the city, by road as well as rail, will be jammed. With HS2, we can free up capacity on our existing lines. The economic benefits will be enormous.
Now listen to the same talk in two sections. Look at questions 9 and 10. This morning, we will hear Derek Burden and Liz Brown talk about Birmingham. Derek is a journalist who lives in Birmingham, but works in London, about 160 kilometers to the south.
We know about London, but what about the city that will be at the other end of the high-speed rail, otherwise known as HS2? And most of my friends have the same sort of reaction to Birmingham, the capital of the Midlands, as did Queen Victoria. When passing through the region by train, she asked for the blinds to be drawn. I mean, this is an insult to Brummies. Even Brummies like me, who work down in London all week and only get home at the weekend. What do you think about all this, Liz?
Well, Derek, you see, my decision to keep one foot in Birmingham after I moved to work in London full-time was based on the city's practical advantages. Let's take the property prices, for example. I have a modest 4-bedroom terrace in Birmingham with lovely large rooms. It's valued at around £220,000. If I sold up and moved to London, I could only hope to exchange it for a shoebox somewhere in the suburbs. What's more, I'd have to give up my garden.
Answer questions 9 and 10, then look at questions 11 and 12.
Another thing is education. It's easy to find a good school in Birmingham because there are lots of them. As I listen to my London-based colleagues complaining about the lack of good schools near their homes and the amount they were having to save to pay for private education, I realised how lucky Brummies are. My 4 daughters went to state-funded grammar schools, all of which had excellent exam results. The expenses were minimal, and most importantly, they were all happy.
Yes, and the high-speed railway, HS2, is so important for the whole West Midlands region and beyond. Those who see HS2 simply as a way of getting to work faster on a Monday morning have missed the point. The real benefit for the West Midlands will be the huge increase in capacity that HS2 promises. Existing services are already overcrowded. By 2024, every route into the city, by road as well as rail, will be jammed. With HS2, we can free up capacity on our existing lines. The economic benefits will be enormous.
Answer questions 11 and 12. This is the third part of the test. In this part, you will hear 5 short dialogues. You will hear each of them twice. Read questions 13 and 14.
Everyone knows the actor George Clooney, but did you know that back in 1984, Clooney starred as Ace Colmar in the ill-fated series ER? The character of Ace Colmar was Clooney's first major starring role.
Are you pulling my leg?
No, you heard right. Back in 1984, he was in a situation comedy called ER. It totally bombed. Clooney wasn't very good in it, even though he'd acted in a lot of TV earlier. And we all know he catapulted to fame as Dr. Doug Ross in the smash television series ER, which began in the 90s, actually 10 years later, 1994. But the 1994 successful ER was a hospital drama. Every episode was full of tense moments. And that second series was his big breakthrough. After that, he has been working in movies, even directing movies.
So both series were about hospital emergency rooms?
That's right. And he was a doctor in both.
Funny.
Now listen to this again and then answer questions 13 and 14.
Everyone knows the actor George Clooney. But did you know that back in 1984, Clooney starred as Ace Colmar in the ill-fated series ER? The character of Ace Colmar was Clooney's first major starring role.
Are you pulling my leg?
No, you heard right. Back in 1984, he was in a situation comedy called ER. It totally bombed. Clooney wasn't very good in it, even though he'd acted in a lot of TV earlier. And we all know he catapulted to fame as Dr. Doug Ross in the smash television series ER, which began in the 90s, actually 10 years later, 1994. But the 1994 successful ER was a hospital drama. Every episode was full of tense moments. And that second series was his big breakthrough. After that, he has been working in movies, even directing movies.
So both series were about hospital emergency rooms?
That's right. And he was a doctor in both.
Funny.
Read questions 15 and 16.
Did you see on the net that last week the six members of the English women's bridge team won gold medals at the World Mind Sports Games?
Yes, saw that. Impressive. And you know, that's the Olympics for that type of game.
It was a fantastic accomplishment. We had a secret weapon, though, and it was not new technology. Just a dab of lavender oil on the nerve spots behind the ears. You know, made from lavender flowers like everyone has in their garden. It's supposed to calm the nerves and improve concentration. And it sometimes annoyed the opponents, particularly the French. They didn't seem to like the smell very much at all.
Well, that's certainly a simple way to win.
The tournament wasn't simple at all. It took heroic endurance over several days and dazzling bridge skills. Not to mention the drugs testing.
Drugs testing for bridge?
Yes. You heard me right.
Now listen to this again and then answer questions 15 and 16.
Did you see on the net that last week the six members of the English women's bridge team won gold medals at the World Mind Sports Games?
Yes, saw that. Impressive. And you know, that's the Olympics for that type of game.
It was a fantastic accomplishment. We had a secret weapon, though, and it was not new technology. Just a dab of lavender oil on the nerve spots behind the ears. You know, made from lavender flowers like everyone has in their garden. It's supposed to calm the nerves and improve concentration. And it sometimes annoyed the opponents, particularly the French. They didn't seem to like the smell very much at all.
Well, that's certainly a simple way to win.
The tournament wasn't simple at all. It took heroic endurance over several days and dazzling bridge skills. Not to mention the drugs testing.
Drugs testing for bridge?
Yes, you heard me right.
Read questions 17 and 18.
You remember the famous movie director, Alfred Hitchcock?
Yeah, the one who did all those famous horror movies, Psycho and so on.
Yes, him. It says here on the net that he was notoriously hard on actors. He was once quoted in the newspapers as saying, "Actors are cattle." That quip stirred up a huge outcry.
Well, that's just crazy.
In response, he issued this correction, which was printed the next day. "I have been misquoted. What I really said is, actors should be treated as cattle. They are just that simple."
Oh, my word. Treated as cattle? That's outrageous. Imagine handling your PR like
that. I should say, he made a total fool of himself.
But you'll have to admit he was, and is, greatly admired.
Now listen to this again and then answer questions 17 and 18.
You remember the famous movie director, Alfred Hitchcock?
Yeah, the one who did all those famous horror movies, Psycho and so on.
Yes, him. It says here on the net that he was notoriously hard on actors. He was once quoted in the newspapers as saying, "Actors are cattle." That quip stirred up a huge outcry.
Well, that's just crazy.
In response, he issued this correction, which was printed the next day. "I have been misquoted. What I really said is, actors should be treated as cattle. They are just that simple."
Oh, my word. Treated as cattle? That's outrageous. Imagine handling your PR like
that. I should say, he made a total fool of himself.
But you'll have to admit he was, and is, greatly admired.
Read questions 19 and 20.
Have you heard about the mice in Farringdon Station? That's the next stop down the line on the tube as I go to work.
Yeah, yesterday John sent me a picture of the notice at that station. It said something like, "Please place the bottom of your trousers into your socks to avoid becoming a victim of the Farringdon mice." I mean, trousers into your socks?
Well, Transport for London will have to do something about it quickly.
But note, despite all the excitement, the sign was quickly revealed to be little more than a harmless prank. Transport for London said that the writing on the whiteboard at the station was not an official message, and it's since been removed.
But anyway, thousands of passengers must have seen it. I mean, I wouldn't fancy being attacked by mice myself.
Now listen to this again and then answer questions 19 and 20.
Have you heard about the mice in Farringdon Station? That's the next stop down the line on the tube as I go to work.
Yeah, yesterday John sent me a picture of the notice at that station. It said something like, "Please place the bottom of your trousers into your socks to avoid becoming a victim of the Farringdon mice." I mean, trousers into your socks?
Well, Transport for London will have to do something about it quickly.
But note, despite all the excitement, the sign was quickly revealed to be little more than a harmless prank. Transport for London said that the writing on the whiteboard at the station was not an official message, and it's since been removed.
But anyway, thousands of passengers must have seen it. I mean, I wouldn't fancy being attacked by mice myself.
Read questions 21 and 22.
Have you heard what happened at the Samsung Open?
No, I haven't. But all sorts of strange things go on at tennis matches. And you know, I'm not such a fan of tennis. Football's my game. It's serious, coordinated team play, after all. Tennis is full of crazy individualists. And tennis is stupid. I mean, I've seen tennis players jumping up and down like complete idiots just because they missed a shot.
Well, this is something really weird. I'd never heard anything like this before. One of the tennis players, Grand something or other, smashed three of his rackets on the serve while hitting the ball across the net. And he was forced to withdraw simply because he didn't have a fourth on hand. Can you believe that?
That is really wild. I bet he was absolutely furious.
You bet he was.
Now listen to this again, and then answer questions 21 and 22.
Have you heard what happened at the Samsung Open?
No, I haven't. But all sorts of strange things go on at tennis matches. And you know, I'm not such a fan of tennis. Football's my game. It's serious, coordinated team play, after all. Tennis is full of crazy individualists. And tennis is stupid. I mean, I've seen tennis players jumping up and down like complete idiots just because they missed a shot.
Well, this is something really weird. I'd never heard anything like this before. One of the tennis players, Grand something or other, smashed three of his rackets on the serve while hitting the ball across the net. And he was forced to withdraw simply because he didn't have a fourth on hand. Can you believe that?
That is really wild. I bet he was absolutely furious.
You bet he was.
This is the fourth part of the test. In this part, you will hear four short dialogues. You will hear each of them once only. Look at question 23.
Have you seen Jill and Harry's new baby?
Yes, I saw him yesterday. He's really an adorable little boy. Such a sweet smile.
And I think he looks just like his dad.
Maybe.
What do you mean, maybe?
Answer question 23. Look at question 24.
Well, what can we say to Alex? We don't want to hurt his feelings, but, you know, he's...
Yes, I know, but I rather think that we have to let him know that he's really living beyond his means. I mean, he can't go on like that.
Answer question 24, then look at question 25.
Did you know that I have a house in Colorado Springs?
No, I didn't.
You remember that terrible fire?
Yes.
Well, my house didn't catch fire, but it sustained damages in excess of $100,000. That was the insurance adjuster's final assessment. The roof was entirely ruined, and most of the exterior walls will have to be replaced. All the windows were cracked.
That's awful. Is your insurance taking care of it?
It's supposed to, but you know what can happen.
Oh, no. You don't say.
Answer question 25. Look at question 26.
Have you heard the government's going through a bit of a rough patch again? The Prime Minister said yesterday they may well have to reshuffle the cabinet. Someone's coming in and a couple of ministers are trading positions or something like that.
Yes, something about the Minister for Education. I forget who is going to come in to fill that place.
Me too, but there is something going on there.
Answer question 26. This is the fifth part of the test. There are five sections. Each section is a separate piece of news. You will hear each section once, and then you will have time to answer that section. Then you will go on to the next section. You will write in Finnish or Swedish. You must write your answers on the special answer sheet. Read question A. Question A, listen to this section and then answer the question.
Back in 1973, NASA launched Skylab, the first American space station. Three successive crews of astronauts lived and worked there for about half a year. Knowing a call to the fire department would accomplish precious little from outer space, NASA developed an alarm system that would alert the station's crew to smoke or fire. The smoke detector used on the space station is that same kind that is now found in 90% of U.S. homes. That's another spin-off from the space program.
Read question B. Question B, listen to this section and then answer the question.
It's not just the pop world that has its share of scandals and misunderstandings. The same is true of classical music. Despite the title of his song, Für Elise, For Elise, Beethoven didn't even know an Elise. Beethoven had horrible handwriting, to the point that some scholars speculate that the song was actually written for Thérèse. Thérèse was one of several women who turned down a marriage proposal from the notoriously lovesick maestro. But who cares? The music's gorgeous.
Read question C. Question C, listen to this section and then answer the question.
In northern India, a special gang was formed. The so-called Pink Gang is a group of village women who usually go around giving out instant justice with heavy poles. They beat those who are in positions of authority and misuse it. And now they've beaten the movie producers who are making a film about the gang's creator, a woman known as Sampat Pal. The gang is sceptical as to how all of this will be shown in the film, and they don't want a typical Bollywood dancing into the sunset movie.
Read question D. Question D, listen to this section and then answer the question.
Without telling their family or friends, James and Sharon ran away from Scotland to England to get married in secret. The couple decided to go to their former hometown of Brighton in order to tie the knot. The pair said their vows in the city hall before heading down to the beach to have their photos taken and enjoy the fantastic weather. While they were on the beach, they were approached by a local photographer. One of these photos, showing the happy couple sitting in deck chairs in their wedding finery, appeared the next day in the Daily Star newspaper. Much to her amusement, James's mother received a text message from a friend expressing her congratulations, and that's how she learned about her son's wedding.
Read question E. Question E, listen to this section and then answer the question.
A Norwegian driver who swerved his car on a rural road to avoid running into a moose hit a bear instead. The driver spotted the moose on a country road near Hanestad, north of Oslo, around midnight on Wednesday, and tried to go around the animal, not realizing that a bear was also nearby. He had lost a bit of speed as he tried to avoid the moose before hitting the bear. The local wildlife authorities are out in the forest searching for the animal and have found traces of blood indicating internal injuries. The driver escaped uninjured while his car suffered a broken windshield.
This is the end of the test. You will now have 8 minutes in which to blacken with a pencil the ovals indicating your answers and to check the written answers. Remember to make sure you have written the following information on your answer sheet: your name and number, and the name and number of your school. In addition, make sure that the information needed for the exam has been carefully marked in. Thank you.